This podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy. The Academy holds a number of courses specifically designed to help marketers and marketing professionals skill up and demonstrate their worth to either their clients or their employers. You can find out more at marketingdevelopment.academy.
The best thing to do is to start building those things before you decide to step out on your own.
Welcome to episode 50 of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and I can't believe that we are at number 50, halfway to 100. Who would have thought it? Anyway, today I am joined by a brilliant guest for a landmark episode, Mr. Philip Van Dusen, all the way from New York, and we talk about his business, personal branding, and he gives so much practical advice that I just want to dive straight in. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, and I am delighted to be joined all the way from the other side of the pond with Philip Van Dusen. Hi, Philip. How are you doing?
Hey, Pete. Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
No, pleasure to have you. Pleasure to have you. So, Philip and I, we did briefly meet at the Upreneur Summit last year, didn't we? But we tried to schedule a recording after it, and it didn't quite happen. So we finally made it.
It was a great conference and a busy one. So it's very easy to make plans and have them get run over.
Yeah, it was. It was. And it was, I don't know how you left, but I know when I leave those things, you know, my head is just buzzing. You've taken on so much in such a short period of time that it takes you, you know, a good few weeks to kind of re-go through the notes and process things and figure out what the practical applications are and all that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And it was a particularly great conference for me because I got an award there, so it was nice.
You did. You were on stage with Mr. Ducker. I saw Chris last week at a different event, funnily enough.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Chris is an awesome guy. And I was last year, I was completely taken by surprise. I won Upreneur of the Year award, and I was completely unprepared to be brought up on stage and have to say anything.
Well, look, it was fully deserved. It was absolutely deserved. So well done. Congratulations and all of that jazz. So for those of us in our audience that may not have heard of you, do you just want to sort of give yourself a quick intro and explain a bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I have had a long career on both in global corporations as well as global agencies. So I'm a senior creative leader. That's where the majority of my time was spent when I was on the corporate side, leading large creative teams, producing graphics and branding and strategy for the Fortune 100. Mm-hmm. I also spent a considerable amount of my early career in fashion retail. So I was working for a large global fashion retailer and running their graphic design for product development, as well as textile design and color and trend. And that's where I learned all about retail and trend hunting. And then I moved over to the agency side and did a whole lot of branding and strategy and CPG work for large companies, and then moved back over to the corporate side towards the end of that run, and was a VP of design for one of the, you know, two largest soft drink companies. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I just struck off on my own. I decided the landscape of the design and marketing world was changing so dramatically. I really wanted to kind of start my own thing. So I jumped out on my own, and then I've spent the last 3 or 4 years building my own personal brand and getting deeply involved in content marketing and bringing all of the knowledge and methodology that I used in my long corporate and agency career to small to medium-sized businesses and entrepreneurs to help them build their brands.
Yeah, that's a far more succinct introduction than I ever could have given you. So thank you for doing that. And it's really interesting to hear you talk about how you've moved both from sort of corporate side to agency side and then back again, but then also from employment side to self-employment side, and how that has sort of how your opinion on that has changed as you said, the marketing landscape has changed over the past few years.
Yeah, it was a major change for me. And, you know, as someone who had spent 25 years building brands for other companies, the fact that I came out of the tail end of that, went out on my own, and realized I was completely out of touch with what was going on in the personal branding and entrepreneurial landscape, in terms of the tools that are used, the methods that are used. And, you know, here I was considering myself an expert, and I came out a babe in the woods. It was just a really, really kind of, it was a wake-up call when I went out on my own. Mm. And that's actually when I fell into Chris Tucker's mastermind group, Youpreneur, because I'd also gone from, you know, managing teams of 60 people in corporate environments to working by myself in my home office. So, you know, as many people say, the entrepreneurial life, it can be a very lonely life. And that was a real kind of wake-up call as well, in terms of, you know, staying inspired and learning. I found myself on an extremely steep new learning curve going into my own entrepreneurial thing. Mm. And I needed to jumpstart my learning process. And so getting involved with a larger mastermind group was really, really beneficial for me.
I completely agree with that and completely concur with it. You know, it's as you say, there are elements of the entrepreneurial life where you are quite exposed, I suppose is the right word for it. And there's a weight of responsibility, particularly if you've got family dependent on you and all of that kind of thing. And there's the one thing that you kind of lose by going out and doing your own thing is that camaraderie of having somebody in the next booth or on the next desk, or the water cooler chat, or being able to grab somebody and say, hey, you know, I'm just really struggling with this. Can I just bounce some ideas off you? So finding that online with people who are in a similar scenario where you can just go, and it's about being able to ask the stupid questions as well as the deep ones. It really does support you as an entrepreneur.
That's absolutely true. And whenever you find, you know, some tool or some process that you're, you know, a complete newbie at, you can, you know, reach out and find someone who's an absolute expert at it, who's willing to give you, you know, 20 minutes of their time on a Zoom call or something to kind of get you up to speed. And one of the ways I found, the quickest way for me anyway, to kind of insinuate myself in a real active way into that community was when I kind of joined that community, the first thing I did was went on the forums and offered up my services for the things that I felt amazingly strong at, which were, you know, brand development, communications, evaluation of design, and offered that up for free to members of the community. And that did a number of things. Number one, it kind of established me as an expert in the community in terms of what I had done for my whole career. But it also offered a lot of value to the community itself. And so I got known within the community, but then also I got to know a lot of people within the community very quickly and more deeply by interacting with them on that level. So I think that, you know, that's a kind of a key aspect of when you are trying to, you know, establish essentially a new network from scratch, is you have to go out there and give value with no expectation of return. And, you know, inevitably what will happen from that, though, is that you do get return. You know, there is a return on that good karma, I think. And that's how it worked for me.
Definitely. And it, you know, it's a concept that has, it's been like that in the sort of the old way of doing business, the personalized way of doing business. If you think about going to networking meetings and, you know, gentlemen's handshakes across the table and all of those kind of things, that giving value before expecting return was was always the way it happened. And then it seems to be, as things have moved more online into more of an instant age, that's where the mental shift has come, that actually, well, you know, I can buy this now. Amazon will deliver it tomorrow, whatever it is. Yet business still works actually in that same old relational way. It's just those relationships are now built online rather than simply the transaction. Does that make sense?
I think it totally makes sense. And the other interesting kind of twist on that is that with the growth and the proven success of content marketing, it's become more of a give value to the general public rather than give value to a specific customer target. And, you know, you may have, you know, in the old world, you know, P2P marketing, person-to-person marketing, where you'd reach out to, you know, a particular, client target that you had and give them value. Now, what you're doing is you're giving value essentially to the world on a global bulletin board, and anyone can read it, take value from it, and then they will then over time seek you out more regularly. You build your brand in terms of being recognized and remembered, and that in return over time brings you new business, but it's not as targeted. Content marketing is not really targeting, you know, targeted to, I mean, where you post is and what you post about is to an extent, but essentially it's like throwing it out into the wind and hoping that, you know, the people that get value out of it will in turn follow you more actively. And I think that's one of the most interesting thing that's happened in the marketing and advertising, because content marketing is advertising to an extent, in the marketing world in the last 20 years, in my opinion.
I think it's also one of the, and I know we're going to sort of touch on this in a few moments as the conversation sort of goes on, but it's also one of the things that has made, it's made marketing on a personal basis, and I sort of mean that both in and out of the context of personal branding, but it's made it accessible to absolutely everybody, but it has also made it in equal measure seem like like it's a little bit more unachievable, the unachievable goal, simply because, you know, you look at somebody like yourself or like Chris Ducker, who we've already mentioned, or I don't know, Russell Brunson, those big names, Gary Vee, and they seem to have all of their stuff lined up, and there's so many different moving parts to it that when I am, you know, John Smith, who is thinking about leaving my job and setting up on my own, and I know all the bits I need to do, but it just seems like such a Herculean task to get this ball rolling.
It is. It's completely, when you go out on your own, it is completely overwhelming. At least it was for me in terms of the very quick realization of how much I didn't know. I mean, and, you know, I had, like I said, spent a couple decades working in marketing and branding environments. And when I went out on my own, I realized that there was a whole landscape of things around branding and marketing, but on a more entrepreneurial level that I had never had to do. I'd never had to learn, and I've never been required to do those things for my clients. It was essentially a brave new world of marketing out there that I was having to learn in order to launch and grow my own business. I mean, the great thing was that I had all of the branding acumen and all of the design acumen. So I had to kind of build the, you know, the marketing and the use of the tools and the building of the digital infrastructure that goes along with, you know, building your own brand. But then I also was, and this was probably, I think, the biggest kind of aha for me. I was starting from absolute zero when it came to developing any kind of a content library. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that very quickly and dove into it very heavily, very early on, because I knew that it takes time. It takes time to develop any kind of, you know, volume of content that can be evergreen enough and you can repurpose enough to continue to work for you. So I launched into that really heavily, first with a newsletter and then with my YouTube channel.
Yeah. Now, both your newsletter and the YouTube channel will be linked to in the show notes. So I'm not quite sure which episode number this is going to be. So whatever it says in the intro and outro, there'll be a link on. There'll be a link straight through to your YouTube channel and newsletter on there, because particularly your YouTube channel has 170 odd thousand subscribers, but your newsletter in particular has been sort of is now taken as one of the leading sort of must-have pieces of content to be delivered in the sort of branding and creative space. I mean, you've really sort of really have picked up a lot of traction with that. So that, you know, that's a testament to obviously who you are and the experience that you bring, but then delivering that in an accessible format.
Well, thank you. That's very charitable of you to say.
Hey, you know, when the name Philip Van Dusen wasn't a strange one to me when I saw you at Upreneur last year. Let me just put it that way.
Well, that's great. That's fantastic. That's good to know. So it's working.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I am, you know, a result of that, a living result. So one of the misconceptions when people start on their own is that branding isn't necessarily for them. You know, branding seems like it should be one of those things, one of those concepts that's for big companies. You know, you think of the Coca-Colas and you think of the Walmarts and all those kind of things. But actually, when I am John Smith, let's use him again, that is wanting to start up my own consultancy, branding can seem like it's a little bit far away from me. So what would you say about sort of the role of branding for the personal brand and the sort of small company?
Sure. I mean, one of the things I talk about a lot is the fact that, you know, there are proprietary methodologies that you know, the Fortune 500 use to brand their companies. And what they do is essentially what entrepreneurs do too. It's just a matter of scale. That branding is branding, no matter whether you're doing it for Coca-Cola or whether you're doing it for John Smith. Mm-hmm. And the fundamentals of it and the needs you have in order to build a brand are the same as well. And I talk a lot about the three R's on my YouTube channel: being recognized, being remembered, and being revered. And branding, you know, visual branding anyway, is a key component of those first two R's, where mm-hmm. you're being recognized and remembered. And one of the things that, you know, entrepreneurs don't realize is that if they're showing up on a number of different platforms, they're showing up on, you know, Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Twitch and Instagram or whatever they're showing up on, that the look and feel of whatever visuals they put out there have to be consistent across all of those platforms. Because what happens is when you show up in someone's feed, they have to be able over time to recognize that what they see in that thumbnail or they see in that post that's coming across their feed is you. And the only way you can establish that ability to be remembered is to establish a level of visual consistency with what you're putting out there. So even, you know, the individual entrepreneur, the mom and pop bakery down the street, they realize that you have to develop, you know, brand identity or a logo. You have to develop a color palette, possibly a pattern or texture. You know, if you're in podcasting or YouTube, you may have to think about sound branding, photography styles, iconography. There's all sorts of different visual components and a layout. Mm-hmm. Also design layout. There's all sorts of visual components around design that you have to make decisions around and establish a visual vocabulary, visual language around, and use it consistently across every single platform that you show up on. And a lot of people don't realize that. And entrepreneurs who start off have a tendency to kind of approach that haphazardly, or they don't go about it in a really planful way. And what happens over time, they'll do a lot of activity on a lot of different platforms and just kind of develop what they need as they go along. And then over time, they realize that they've just got this rat's nest of visual stuff that's creating a level of confusion when they are showing up in people's feeds. Mm-hmm. And so what they're doing is they're sacrificing any kind of brand equity they could be building in their own personal brand or their own entrepreneurial brand, which is, you know, when every time you show up, if you're showing up consistently and looking consistent, you are building that level of recognition and being able to be remembered. And if you're not, then you're abdicating that. And that's one of the key components of brand, you know, branding 101 that every entrepreneur and every personal brand builder has got to pay attention to.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you anymore. It's and it's the sort of juxtaposition of it is that it's one of those things that when somebody is starting out and they simply want to get going and budgets are potentially stretched or non-existent, that it's the first thing that gets overlooked and put on the I'll sort this later pile. But actually the reality of it is that the sooner that you can address that and get that consistency flowing, the better it is for you in the long run.
I completely agree, and I feel very strongly, and it's not just because this is what I do, but that making that it does take an investment, and making that financial investment in your business and the early part of it will ultimately save you 10 times the amount of money down the road. Because what happens is if you go about it in a planful way to begin with, yes, you're going to have to outlay some money in order to have that kind of brand ecosystem of visual elements designed. But then if you don't do it and you go about it in that haphazard way, and a year from now you have to go back and clean everything up, not only do you have to have all that stuff designed anyway, but then you also have to have all those materials that you've already put out there redone. And that's when it gets really, really expensive. So it's almost better to kind of bite the bullet at the beginning than it is to spend the time and money and headache of having thrown away a year of brand equity and have to go back and clean it up later.
Yeah. And there's so many entrepreneurs that we both know that will testify that that's the exact way that it works.
Well, and a lot of my business comes from that, to tell you the truth. I mean, and I work with $50 million companies that have done the same thing. You know, they're very entrepreneurial. They've grown at an incredible rate, and they've, you know, been spending all of their time and energy on growing the financial revenue of their business, but they haven't ever invested in that consistency of their brand design from the beginning. And then, you know, they call me up and say, we are a mess and we need to get it all figured out. Can you help us? And you know, that's what I love to do. It's always sad to see that it happened though, but you know, it does put bread on my table.
You know, every cloud and
just,
all.
Just to be honest.
I know, but it's dead true. And actually, you know what? If they'd come to you to begin with, and you'd set them off on the right foot, then
that's very
you wouldn't have quite so much bread on the table.
Yeah.
Or you would have the same amount of bread just from more people. Let's look at it that way.
And the funny thing is you know, people say to me, you know, Phil, you're putting all this amazing information out on your YouTube channel, and you're basically teaching people how to do all this stuff. How can you just give it all away? And here's the thing. People, you know, they don't understand the complexity of what it is that we as marketing people do a lot of the times. And you can, you know, really open the kimono, you know, let them behind the velvet curtain and show them exactly how to do this stuff. But when it comes right down to it, they don't have the time or energy to do it. But they now have an appreciation of how important it is and how difficult it is to do. And that can actually help your business rather than take business away from you.
I wish this was a visual recording and you could see my head nodding up and down right now. That is exactly it. A lot of the content I create is around SEO, and I get criticisms, I would say, probably at least once a month, if not more frequently than that, of other SEO experts contacting me saying, why are you telling people the way that we do our job? That's, you know, you're taking it away. And I have exactly the same response. It's like, you know, all I'm really doing is now validating the price that I'm going to charge when somebody comes to me and says, I've not got the time to do that. What, can you do it for me?
Here's a great example. If you take your car in to get it fixed, right, your transmission is acting up. Right. If you don't know anything about what a transmission looks like or how it operates or what it does for your car or how you get to it when you open an engine up, you'll walk in and say, you know, my transmission's acting up. And your mechanic will say, okay, that will be $5,000. And you're like, what? And right. And then, but then if he shows you, you know, he's got an engine taken apart in the back of his garage. And he says, this is where the transmission is. These are the pieces that go into it. This is how it turns and how it moves. And this is the thing that's broken in your engine. This is what it takes to get to it. And these are the parts that we're going to need to fix it. And that all of that is like exactly what I do. I show people the inner workings of how all of this stuff works. But do I then have an appreciation for like how difficult it is to fix my transmission? Yes. Do I know exactly how to do it? Yes. Do I want to do it myself? Absolutely not. And do I then appreciate why he's going to charge me $5,000 to fix my transmission? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just made that $5,000 sale even easier for him, really.
That's exactly the
reality.
And that's one of the things about content marketing, and I'm sure you're experiencing this already in your podcast, is that when people learn about what you do and how you think and what you know, that then when they eventually reach out to you and say, you know, I'm interested in doing business with you. I think that you can help me with a problem that I have for my business. They already feel like they know you. They already feel like they trust you, and you've just knocked off that first hour conversation where you have to sell yourself in as an expert in your field, or that you would be right for helping them. And that's one of the biggest heavy lifting, cool things about content marketing that I've experienced myself, is that when people come to me, they reach out to me, they already know they want me to help them. It's not even like I have to sell it. And that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? The other thing it does is it starts to pre-qualify the people that do get in touch with you. Because the people that don't agree with what you say, look, I don't create any content with the intention of hacking people off, of rubbing them up the wrong way. But on the same note, what you've got to accept when you do start on this journey of putting yourself out there is that you need to have an opinion on certain things. And some people will agree and some people won't. And for those people that won't, that's absolutely fine. I wish them well. Off you go on your journey. This one is mine. And I want to work with the people that agree with me. And that's not to say I'm right on everything, but you know what I mean. You get the concept. You're pre-vetting those people that aren't going to be or are going to be a bad fit for you in the long run.
And also you're establishing yourself at the level that you will justify your fees, you know,
yeah.
Because you are showing yourself to be an expert and not just, you know, a kid right out of school who's just, you know, trying to get as much money from someone as they can. You know, they have a certain, of course you're going to get the emails from the odd person who's like, you know, do you do logos for $150? I can get that on Fiverr, you know? But for the most part, when people reach out to me, they know that, you know, I'm not cheap and that I do good work. Yeah. And that comes from the other interesting thing is, you know, when people fall across a piece of my content, whether it's in LinkedIn or whether it's on YouTube or something, they generally will go and then binge on, you know, they'll come to me and write an email and say, I happened across this video you did on content marketing, and I then watched 7 of your videos in quick succession, and I know now that I want to work with you, and that is my perfect scenario right there.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's exactly. I think we've started to come back around full circle on that one, and it's been a great little sort of facet of this podcast, because we've sort of gone around and spoken about the benefits of it. Absolutely. So just to give the guys that are listening then a bit of a sort of practical sort of place to start, there is a nucleus of people that listen to this podcast that are either thinking of making the leap from full-time employment to self-employment, or maybe they have started their own self-employment thing in the past, I don't know, 6 to 12 months. So they're still trying to figure out this whole brand thing. Where is the best place for them to start? What are the things they should be considering as they're going through that startup phase?
Now, are these people who are just in any field?
They would be in the marketing field. So the people that reach out to me in the group are marketing, normally either marketing consultants within their first year of business, or they are a marketing professional working for a bigger organization. So, you know, they would be part of maybe a marketing team, and they want to get out of the rat race and start doing their own consultancy, their own, I don't know, copywriting, whatever it might be, but they're working within the marketing space.
Yeah, so there's a couple, I guess, different things I'd love to share about on that. One is that transition by itself. And having made that transition myself in the last 3 years, when I was working on the global agency side, I was working with really big clients. And one of my major clients, it was apparent to us, we were the agency of record for that client. We managed a number of their brands, and they started pulling back work from us and giving it to smaller and smaller agencies because those agencies were faster, more nimble, cheaper. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they were consultancies. So they were virtual agencies, or they weren't actual brick and mortar, big, you know, global agencies. And that hurt our big global agency pretty significantly because we had big chunks of business being taken away from us. Hmm. I then, a year or so later, went over to the client side, and I was a VP of design for a global soft drink manufacturer. And I, on the internal side, was then working with external agencies to do branding jobs for me. Mm-hmm. And I was the client. And I found myself then doing the exact same thing. I could hire an agency like the one I had just worked for and pay them $150,000 to do a big branding job for me. Or I could brief, and this is really in reality what I did on one occasion. I took a global snacks project and I gave it to a four-person agency in Vermont. And they did it in half the time for half the money. And they gave me just as good product as this global agency would have. Mm. And that was a real wake-up call for me because I realized the rise of the consultant class and the impact of the digital borderless global economy was having a massive impact on the branding and marketing world. And I decided when I decided to leave that corporate gig that I was going to kind of pay attention to that shift in the landscape of the marketing industry, mm-hmm. and build a consultancy, a virtual agency that was based around partnerships and as being as brick and mortarless as possible and being fast and nimble, but providing global agency level work, but without the global agency level price tag or the kind of glacial slowness that those agencies can exhibit. Mm. And so I decided to a certain extent be on the right side of history for once and build what I saw was the new paradigm. And that is what I'm seeing in the industry. And I have, you know, my agency is based on partnerships, so I can do a project for a global company and I will bring in very senior level experts that I've worked with at agencies and companies through my career and build a project team to address that project. And then we disband and we go our merry way afterwards. And I will white label my services under other people's consultancies, even though that rarely happens because I stay very busy, but people will do that for me. And that gives me the level of flexibility to offer, you know, excellent level work faster and cheaper than my global brick and mortar agency competitors, because I'm not carrying, you know, a 20-person design staff headcount and paying them when I don't have project work coming in. So that's one thing I would say to your, you know, to your audience of marketing professionals who are thinking about possibly stepping out on their own, is that they probably are seeing this happen too. And that, you know, the stats are saying that over 50% of the population in the United States anyway will be either freelancers or consultants in the next three to 5 years. That is a gigantic shift in the working paradigm. And so paying attention to that is going to be important for your longevity, your career longevity. And I think it's particularly hitting the marketing and advertising worlds, both on the corporate side as well as the agency side. And then, you know, kind of a follow-up, which I think was the real point of your question, which was, you know, what do people need to do to start from the beginning when they head off on their own, they start to build their own brand? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the first thing anybody needs is, this is the funny thing, you know, I'd had this huge marketing career, and when I got off and went out on my own, I had like a 3-page website. I had basically like a black and white website with my resume and a little bio and then a slideshow portfolio, and that was it, you know? And so I had to, you know, take a serious look at redoing my website and making it much, much more robust. Mm-hmm. I had never branded myself. I'd never developed a color palette and our identity or a design look or feel, anything that I knew I was going to have in my palette of design tools in order to start showing up in a professional way as an agency. And so I had to develop all that stuff. And that is everything from, you know, a logo, website, color, palette, texture, icons, photo style, all that sort of stuff, but as well as all of the tools of an agency, which are, you know, presentation deck formats and invoices and infrastructure for billing and putting out proposals and, you know, and the list just goes on and on. So I think that if you are currently employed, the best thing to do is to start building those things before you decide to step out on your own. To start building that that website infrastructure, start building that your business tools that you're going to need, and tiptoeing into it while you still have that paycheck coming in. Because, you know, I have to be honest with you, it's like it takes, you know, even for a seasoned professional, it takes a good year and a half to really get up to speed and start getting client work coming in, because you do have to build all those things from scratch. So the more you can kind of get that going before you jump off on your own, the better.
Yeah, I completely agree with you again, funnily enough, on that. And I've started two businesses in the past, and the way I started both of them was that, you know, it was, you start small, you start by taking on sort of side projects. I guess Gary Vee would call it the hustle. But you know, that is how you do it. And then when you then have some momentum in there, and you've figured out how these processes work, and you've got, you know, you've got the invoicing software set up, you've got the sort of initial branding done, you've got your tone of voice, you've got a workflow going through, all of those kind of things, then you can find the space by getting rid of the day job to actually scale this to the first level, which is, right, this now needs to bring me in an income. This needs to pay the bills each month.
Absolutely. And I recommend that people have at least a year of living expenses banked before they do that.
Yep. Yeah. And that is, you know, the second business I started, I did with two children and a wife, obviously, at home.
Pete, God bless you. You are a brave man.
I tell you what, the first day sitting at the desk, I was thinking, if this doesn't work, I'm going to be in so much trouble.
Yeah, I had two dogs and a wife. I didn't even have kids. So it was like I was still sweating it out.
No, Phil, thank you so much for that. I think that's been a really good starting point. I know that you create so much value on your YouTube channel, as you've said, and I've just pulled up the Upreneur Academy, because within there you also did a workshop, didn't you, on personal branding as well?
That was my very first video ever.
Oh, was
it? And I look, yes. And the very first video ever that I did at the request of Chris Ducker, and it's on the website behind the, you know, paywall for the Upreneur community. And it is so crappy. I mean, I have to say the content is great, but the video production and everything about it just makes me cringe. But it was the minimum viable product that launched my content development, YouTube, you know, kind of endeavor. And so I'm grateful to him for asking me to do that. And it's, you know, from the feedback I've gotten, it's been very helpful to a lot of people. But if anyone's curious, that video is about the 9 brand design elements that every business needs. And I actually redid that video for my YouTube channel about a year later under much higher production level circumstances. So if anyone's curious about it, they can look that video up. I also do it in about half the amount of time.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that they do say that practice makes perfect. And
yes.
I was at a conference last week, and there was one of the speakers was talking about the importance of video in personal branding. Mm-hmm. And they put this big slide up, and it just said on it that your 51st videos will be terrible.
Yes. Yes.
But
I have a motto. My motto that I try to live by is dare to suck. And because no matter what you do, the first 50 videos that you do are going to suck a little bit. And, yep. But you have to do them. And here's the good news. The good news is that when you start off doing content, no one's there. You don't have an audience. It's yep. It's just crickets. So, you know, you go about it thinking, you know, you're absolutely terrified hitting that post button or that publish button. But when it comes down to it, you know, only a handful of people are going to see it. So that's the good news, is that just start, get the stuff out there, work through all those, you know, all those headaches and all those false starts and all those technical problems. And don't let the intimidation of going public stop you. Just get out there and do it.
Brilliant. That's a fantastic note to end on. Thank you, Philip. If people want to reach out to you, what's the best place that they can find you online?
Sure. My website is philipvandusen.com, and I encourage anybody to join my newsletter. It's called Brand Muse, and it comes out every 2 weeks, and I share an insight and resources and a book and a couple great articles and videos on branding and entrepreneurship. And you can sign up for that at philipvandusen.com/muse, M-U-S-E.
Fantastic. I'll
You can also look me up on my YouTube channel, obviously, because yep. it's just under my name, Philip Van Dusen. And I'd love to see you in the comments there.
Fantastic. There'll be links to all of that stuff in the show notes, which in just a second, it will be mentioned in the outro as to exactly what that link is. So thank you so much for your time, Philip. It's been a real joy listening to you. And I normally sit here recording a podcast, making notes, and I've just been sitting back in my chair listening to and absorbing what you've been saying. So I'm going to have to listen to this again to write the show notes. thanks for your time.
Pete, thanks you so much for inviting me. This has been really fun.
No problem. Thanks for your time, Philip. I really hope everybody listening found that useful. There was a number of things that we didn't get to talk about, and I'm really looking forward to having you on the show again. Show notes for this episode can be found at peteeverett.com/050, and go and check out our SEO course that's available at marketingdevelopment.academy. Until next week, we'll see you then.